Welcome in to your Friday morning edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast. Gavin Shaw, Alex Wolf with you here for our first ever Fan Friday, where we welcome on our guest, Sam Montella. I'm guessing his height, maybe 5'10", shooting guard out of Penn State. We are super excited to have him on. He wrote out a whole show for us, but before we even get into that, we got some background on him as a Knicks fan, his favorite moments as a Knick, and why they're very similar to mine based on when we were born.
I think we're going to need to work up like some sort of a Fan Friday intro in the future. But, you know, Sam kicked us off. We're going to need to do like Fan Friday. At any rate, Sam brought us a great topic for tonight, which was to figure out which current NBA players Knicks are most like. And we started off with some comparisons for Dennis Smith Jr., Kevin Knox, Frank Ntilikina, and Mitchell Robinson.
And then we finished up by asking if Alonzo Trier could have two girls like Lou Will, and whether Kadeem Allen is better than some other mediocre backups across the NBA. And we finish up by projecting Kristaps Porzingis' next 5 years in the NBA. Only one of us had him ending up as a garden snake. That and more next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Knox foul from behind, counting at one. As Fisdale pumps his fist.
Ntilikina. What he does is contagious.
Robinson with a catch and slam. Across the lane to Trier. Trier drives.
Welcome in to a Friday morning edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast. Gavin Shaw, Alex Wolf with you. And for the first time in a while, we have a third guest. It's our first ever edition of Locked On Knicks Fan Friday. Our first ever winner of the inaugural edition of Fan Friday, Sam Montella, who got a little bit of background into the podcasting world as we recorded 5 minutes with Sam. Except we didn't. I didn't hit the record button, so we're starting again. But Sam, once again, welcome into Locked On Knicks. We are so happy to have you on.
Yeah, for the second time, I'm glad to be here. It's pretty exciting. I said before, I'm pretty nervous. It feels like a job interview.
No, I can tell it's genuine because you haven't lost any excitement since the first. All right. So essentially, the reason, first of all, the differentiator between Sam and some of our other applicants is that Sam literally sent us a full rundown for the show, which I don't think anyone else did. So Sam quite literally put more work into this podcast than I won't speak for Alex, but than I do at points. And essentially, Sam, and let me know if I'm messing this up, but your premise was taking current Knicks and comparing them to other guys across the NBA. Usually we'd have two different comparisons for some of the younger Knicks, one of them sort of being the upside for the player and another one sort of being the downside for the player.
Yeah, that's essentially it.
Okay.
Sliding scale.
Right. And before we even get into that, I wanted to kind of get some background on you. How did you initially become a Knicks fan?
Yeah, so I became a Knicks fan through my older brother, actually. I grew up in Jersey, which I know kind of takes a ding to my credibility already, I think.
No. Don't be ashamed of that. Shouts to Jersey. I'm in New Jersey right now. So
all right, cool. But, I mean, my dad was a Celtics fan. My little brother is a Heat fan. I think he's a big Chris Bosh guy or something. I don't know. And then I don't know, my older brother just got me into the Knicks and I guess I could say I'm a loyal guy. I just stuck with it. But I mean, it's pretty much been a bad tenure since the whole time, because I mean, I'm 25, so I was born in 93. So I could argue that I was alive for 98 cause I was, but I don't remember shit from 98. So basically, my best moment is beating the Celtics in what, 2013, 2012?
Yeah, 2013.
2012-13, yeah.
And really, my favorite moment from that was developing a hatred for J.R. Smith shooting 20% in that Pacers series. So that's kind of my fondest memory so far.
You're fond. That's the most Knicks-y answer of all time. My favorite memory of being a Knicks fan is learning to hate somebody.
J.R. Smith, come on down. He's the guy. Ray Felton, too, while we're at it. And Tyson Chandler, all three of them.
Oh, man. Yeah, I always say, like, the first, because I'm in the same boat as you. I was born in 95, so I really didn't get to experience, like, anything remotely.
Nope.
outside of that season. I would argue, in my mind, I think the first 20 games of that season, I've said this on the podcast before, were pretty clearly the highest and most excited I've ever been on the Knicks. Because there was that weird stretch, and they finished the season this way, but it was at a completely different level over the first 20 games, where it just hadn't totally broken down yet. And they were kind of ahead of the entire curve in the league in terms of shooting threes. Like, they were shooting a record number of threes. They were making like 38, 39% of them. Like, Steve fucking Novak was doing the discount double check every time.
Love Novak.
To me, those 20 games are kind of the golden era of the Knicks. Because all the guys who were sort of ahead of, like, even like just like not even the analytics curve, but just in terms of like splitting up the season, were saying like, look, like the Knicks were amazing the first 20 games. After that, they were basically like an average like playoff team. And then that kind of showed up beating the Celtics and then sort of getting run by those Pacers in the second round. But to me, those 20 games, especially like when they also had Rasheed Wallace in the lineup, are always as the golden era of my Knicks fandom.
Sam, let me ask you this. I'm curious. Who's your favorite Nick, being like on the younger end of the spectrum?
Oh, it's no doubt Melo. I mean, my mom went to Syracuse, so I grew up a Syracuse fan. So like, I already had that attachment to him. So I'm a Melo guy. I'll defend Melo to the death, and I still do to this day. But Melo is definitely my favorite Nick.
Nice. All right. Important follow up question on that. That is totally unrelated to it. Maybe we might circle back to Melo. What is the, and I didn't prime you for this, so you might not have something, but what is the, like, most stringently you've disagreed with anything that me or Alex has said? Like, have you ever started like cursing us out while listening to the podcast?
No, there's nothing that comes off the top of my head that I can really like speak to. I know you guys are looking for something to disagree on, so hopefully I can provide that tonight with these comparisons.
Yeah, I wanted some spice, and it's tough because we usually like we are generally in agreement, like, and I do think at some point we'll have someone come on who's just gonna start screaming at me like about the point. they're gonna be like really nice like in the messages leading up, oh yeah, like thanks a lot Gavin, like I'm so excited to talk to you guys, and then like the second we like put them on air, they're gonna be like, fuck this guy, KP's a snake, he doesn't know what he's talking about. And I was kind of hoping for that for you, Sam, but I appreciate.
Well, I mean, it took me like 3 hours to get over the Porzingis trade. I'll be honest.
Right.
Dude, like, I got to give you credit, like, for being a nice guy and not calling Gavin out right there. That was very nice of you.
I don't know about you guys. I felt genuinely relieved after like 2 hours after he was traded. I was just like, thank God it's over. Like, I knew it was probably going down. Like, there wasn't going to be a big makeup. I didn't think it was going to end well with us and him. So, I mean, I just felt relief. And, like, I thought they did the best they could with the options they had, knowing all the information now. So I was okay with it.
Yeah, I felt the same way. That's kind of where I was in the headspace I was at by the time that we recorded that podcast that night, I think. I had kind of just come to terms with it at that point.
And don't get me wrong, right when it happened, my jaw was on the floor. Like, I turned around, I was at work, like, I turned around, like, I work with, like, 15 people in one room. I just turned around, I was like, holy shit, Porzingis is traded. Everyone's like, because we joke, and they're like, you're fucking with me. Can I swear?
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely, swear away.
Yeah, they're like, you're fucking with me. No one even believed me. Like, that's how ridiculous it was.
Yeah, I was going through a similar situation because I was at the busiest point of my work day when that whole thing went down.
Yeah,
it was Gavin's like, we're like texting back and forth, and I'm like talking to the posting and toasting people, and we're like, oh my God, what is going on? And then like, I'm like, dude, like I had to just like close all internet for like 30 minutes because I had to finish my work day because I have like a deadline driven job. It was not a great day, like for that to happen, I should say, not a great time, I should say, for that to happen.
I left work early. I just died to process. I have a 50-minute subway ride back up. I live in the Upper East Side. I took the 50 minutes and just kind of sat back and closed my eyes. I was like, what the hell? And then I was okay with it. I am okay with it. I thought obviously, depending on the summer, it worked out for the best.
What's your what's like your confidence level in Durant and in Kyrie?
So I actually spent like, I spent like 8 or 10 years living in the Boston area. So they are like, I never bet against the Celtics or any New England sports team because it just keeps kicking me in the ass. Durant, I have to say, I'm pretty confident about Durant. I mean, all this stuff that's out, we all know what's out there. It's pretty damning. And like, I don't, at this point, I'm not going to guarantee it. That would be stupid. But like, I'd be shocked if he didn't come. Kyrie, not so much, because if they do well in the playoffs, then I could see him staying just as easily. I also see him as kind of a volatile guy. To be like, this might be even crazy, but like, so pissed off at the media that he just like, it helps him, it pushes him to staying. I don't even know, but that thought has popped in my head before. So not so confident on Kyrie. I think if KD does come, I mean, how could he not come? But I think we have a pretty good shot at definitely KD.
Yeah, it's starting to feel more telegraphed at this
point. Yeah, it's starting to feel obvious. I mean, him moving his offices to New York and stuff, it's just like, what? It's little things like that, but it's just like there's so many of them are building up that it just makes it seem like it. I would be shocked if he didn't come.
Yeah, it is like similar to, or it's starting to feel a little bit similar to last year, where like everyone just kind of knew LeBron's going to LA. But I also like, I can't, like, my mind doesn't work
that way. Can't wrap my head around that.
I feel like if I lock it in, I know it's not going to happen, is the way I'm thinking about it. So I basically like,
yeah,
I want to be proven wrong. I want to be dubious. I want to be doubtful. I want to be pessimistic until it happens. And then like people can go on Twitter and be like, screw you, I knew it was going to happen. And I can be like, yeah, you're absolutely right. Thank God I was wrong. So I want to get to that point, basically.
We're scared of being like the boy who cried wolf. I mean, you go in people's Twitter mentions and shit, and like people who aren't Knicks fans are just like, yeah, same old Knicks. They're not going to get anyone. And I'm just like, we are going to get this one, I swear. I mean, I don't know. I think we're going to get them, but I don't really know.
Yeah.
It feels like we're due. I hope that when we look back that the summer of 2019 gets looked at as like the summer of the Knicks.
Yeah. I mean, you'd hope.
Anyways.
I held my breath last night when Zion went down, but
yeah.
It's okay. Just a little sprain.
I know. But last night at the moment, I was like, whew.
Honestly, that would have probably helped the Knicks, because the Knicks are going to fall back, and then you know, maybe some team talks himself out of him.
I was thinking today, if he tore his ACL, we definitely would have got the first pick.
Yeah, that would have been typical. All right, that will wrap up our first segment, because I want to get into these comparisons. So we'll come back next, first ever Fan Friday with Sam Montella, talking about if Dennis Smith Jr. is more Eric Bledsoe or Reggie Jackson, and more comparisons between young Knicks and current NBA players. Next on Locked On Knicks.
Welcome back to Locked On Knicks. I am Alex Wolf. I am joined, as always, by Gavin Shaw, and not as always, by Sam Montella, here for our first Fan Friday, Triple F, first Fan Friday. Sam sent us a really cool idea for a show today. So we're comparing Knicks, like the current Knicks, to current NBA players and trying to decide if they're more like this guy or more like that guy. So we're going to jump right into that, because I'm intrigued and excited to get into this. I guess we'll start with Dennis Smith Jr. here. Do you want to lead us in, Sam, since this is like your segment?
Yeah. I'll bring us in. So basically, they wrapped it up earlier, but it's just comparing current Knicks to current NBA players. And my idea behind it was at least doing like it's a scale. So there's always room for more comparisons, and I encourage that. But the first one, yeah. So Dennis Smith Jr., is he more like Eric Bledsoe or Reggie Jackson? I still haven't even really come up with a full answer for this, but I think I would have to give him the edge and go, he's definitely going to end up more like Eric Bledsoe than Reggie Jackson. I think everyone who watches basketball knows Eric Bledsoe has been a really good player this year. And I think if watching DSJ and the seven Knicks games, the difference between him and Reggie Jackson so far, I mean, there's a lot of them, but at least it looks to me as if Dennis is trying to play defense. And, you know, obviously athleticism thing. So I don't know. I'm curious to hear what you guys have to say about this.
Yeah, I personally could definitely see the Bledsoe comparison. I'm hoping maybe over time he becomes a better three-point shooter than Bledsoe is, because Bledsoe is a career 34% three-point shooter. But, yeah, I could definitely see that more so than I could see Reggie Jackson, at least based off how we've seen Dennis Smith play so far with the Knicks? And obviously, like, you know, it's a small sample size, but
of course,
based off of, you know, how he plays the game under Fizdale, where he's been keeping the turnovers under control, he's dishing a decent amount of assists. He's been, I won't say efficient, because he hasn't really been that efficient shooting the ball, but I mean, neither is Bledsoe, to be fair. I mean, Bledsoe is not really like the most efficient guy ever. Although he's definitely better than what Smith has been. I think, like, if Smith can work on his finishing ability around the rim, for sure, he could be more like Bledsoe. And yeah, I think that's a pretty, like, solid comparison for him. As long as, you know, you mentioned the defense, and, like, I don't know if he'll ever be a fantastic individual defender, but no. I think that there's definitely room for him to be like a good help defender, which, like, if he and Ntilikina work out long term, that would be a good role for him, being able to just kind of hawk the passing lanes and stuff like that, which he's proven to be good at.
Yeah, I will say, I think I'm in agreement with both of you. I think Eric Bledsoe is the better comparison. I mean, not just in terms of ability, but in terms of playing style. And I think kind of a crucial thing to remember is Smith is 21 and already, I mean, obviously wasn't that effective in Dallas, and it's hard to gauge what constitutes effectiveness on this Knicks team, where it's just a completely lost season, and he's playing a role that he would probably never play on a really good team, even in his prime. But Bledsoe came into the NBA at 21, which is the same age Smith is now. At 22, Bledsoe was averaging just 3 points a game, and that was obviously because he was behind Chris Paul, and there were others there, but he was also just, I mean, that season shooting 39% from the field, 20% from three. So if you're looking for a reason to be bullish on Smith's trajectory, you could look at sort of the transformation that Bledsoe went through from his time on the Clippers to his time on the Suns, where his first year in Phoenix was actually one of his best years in the NBA, 48% from two, or overall 40 or 36% from 3 point range. And I guess I kind of expect a lot of the same trajectory from Smith, where I don't think he's going to turn himself into a consistent player until his late 20s, and maybe even that comes at a point where his athleticism is past his peak. But I think at some point, I do think he's crafty enough to find a way to eventually be a contributor on a good team. I'm just not sure if it's in the current iteration stylistically that he is now, where he's just this uber athlete and a guy who can dunk on everyone. Like, I think it's going to take him quite a long time to refine those aspects of his game and become a good enough shooter that he becomes a palatable point guard on a really, really good team. So I think he has a lot of Bledsoe's strengths and a lot of his faults as well.
Yeah. I think the thing I've appreciated about him most, and I kind of mentioned it before, is that I appreciate that he actually looks like he wants to be good at D. I don't know if you guys have seen the same thing, but, like, at least, like, he's trying. It's not like Hezonja, where it's just like, I don't know, or Kanter, God forbid, where it's just like, I don't know what the hell's going on. Do you guys see that too?
I go back and forth, but I think it's inconsistent. I think there are possessions where he's very locked in, and like those sort of flash when you watch him, and you're like, oh, okay, like I see what he can be. And it was interesting because we talked to the Locked On Mavs guys, Alex, you more than me even, so you can comment on this, but they were pretty bullish on his defense in general, and that was something I was kind of surprised at, because I know even on this podcast, like, I was probably coming from a place of ignorance, but I was saying, yeah, he's not really known for his defense. And he does flash really good moments, but you look at even, I can't remember, I think it might have been his first game against the Grizzlies, where he was doing a pretty good job on Mike Conley for three or four possessions, and then he just sort of fell asleep for another three, and Mike Conley hit like two threes and a layup. So you just, I mean, that's sort of the NBA, the point guard position is so competitive, you need to do that possession after possession after possession, and I don't think he's at that point yet, but I do think the potential's there, and I do kind of agree with your general assessment that it's not like he's indifferent to it.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you guys have any other comparisons? Do you think Eric Bledsoe is the guy in the NBA that he is most like or could be most like? Or do you think there's someone else? Because I racked my brain for him.
Yeah, I don't know. Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, I was actually just going to say, I don't really know. I guess I'm trying to think of,
if you want
to
go, if we're leaving the present, I would say Steve Francis. I mean, that's one that's been bandied about.
I can see Steve Francis. Like,
all right. Yeah, Steve Francis.
Yeah, we got a few of these to get through. So let's go on to Kevin Knox, and this is a loaded one. This is ambitious. All right. Do you think more like rookie Kevin Durant or Jeff Green? And I am gonna flat out say I think I think pretty clearly Jeff Green. I mean, Kevin Durant at the same age was averaging 20 points per game in the NBA as a rookie. And he, I mean, I think just because of the height and the shooting ability, just projected a whole different ceiling than Knox. I mean, do I hope that Knox will become a more consistent guy than Jeff Green? Absolutely. And I think there are signs there that he is a better overall player. But I think right now, in some ways, Jeff Green is kind of a good comp for what we've seen from him so far, just because of all the inconsistency and crossed with the flashes of brilliance, which I think is the dichotomy that sort of defined Jeff Green's career.
Yeah, I'm there as well. Go ahead, though, Sam.
Yeah, I mean, if he ends up being Jeff Green, it'll be a bust, I think. But I was never insinuating he was going to be KD, but from what I remembered from KD's rookie year, was he really averaged 20 points his rookie year? See, I didn't know that.
He did. He averaged 20 points.
Didn't
he shoot poorly?
Yeah, he wasn't very efficient because he wasn't strong enough.
He shot 43%, but I think the biggest difference to me between Knox and Durant is that Durant, even his rookie year, was getting to the free throw line 5.5 times a game.
Oh, yeah. It's...
And Knox is averaging under 3 right now. So that's a big differentiator to me. Like, I felt like Durant, even his rookie year, already looked like he had a lot more ball skills than Knox does. And mm-hmm. So that's probably the differentiator for me. I mean, I certainly hope that Knox develops more, and I hope that he doesn't end up Jeff Green. But, like, statistically and game-wise speaking, he looks more like Jeff Green right now. And that's, like, not a horrible thing either, necessarily. Just because Jeff Green, his rookie year, looked like a more promising player. Yeah, exactly. So it's not necessarily a bad thing. Just hopefully he takes a different path. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Jeff Green had good years, too. Like, really solid years. This one was definitely all the two on the extreme. So I was definitely interested to see if you guys had any other comparisons on Knox.
I will, even before we get to that, I just want to throw one more thing out. If you want to be bullish about Kevin Knox's shooting down the road, because I'm just looking at this now, Kevin Durant, I did not realize this, only a 29% three-point shooter as a rookie. So, I mean, again.
That's where I was thinking.
Yeah, something to cling on to for Knicks fans. But that's a great question. I'm trying to think of who's a good guy.
I've got another good comp.
Oh, go ahead.
I've got a good ceiling comp for him that I don't know if he'll ever reach, but this would be like what I would envision maybe more realistic than becoming the next Kevin Durant. I could maybe see Kevin Knox becoming the next Rashard Lewis.
That's great.
I like that. Yeah.
If he can really hit his ceiling.
Well, and he's more dynamic, or I think he like should be more dynamic in transition than Rashard Lewis ever was, and off the dribble like that. That to me, like, if you want to be bullish on Kevin Knox becoming an all-star type player, it's like those little flashes he has of like getting low and like kind of crouching around a pick and roll and speeding to the rim or in transition, like his ability to go to a basket, alter a shot, still finish. I mean, the floater, it's kind of the stuff almost beyond the shooting. Because I just like, I like Rashard Lewis in terms of like the level of effectiveness he can be. And like, in terms of like overall ability as a scorer, I don't think he'll ever be that level of shooter, but I do think he'll potentially be able to offset that with a more diverse offensive game.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Rashard Lewis wasn't just a jump shooter either, though. It's not like he was Peja or something, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, he could put the ball on the floor a little bit, just not to the level of someone like a Durant or right. Something like that.
There's just moments where I'm watching Knox play where, like, I can see, like, it's almost like you feel like you can see in the future where you can see where he would be able to get anywhere he wants on the court and do anything he wants on the court. Like, it seems like that raw ability is there. It's like pretty impressive, but then it's just so inconsistent right now, and I can't place whether the inconsistency is growing pains or part of his game.
Yeah, it's tough to tell.
Yeah, and I think the environment he operates in isn't very conducive to success. Like, I just think I want to give him the benefit of the doubt because there's so many things working against him, and I mean we've talked about it a lot on this podcast, but I will say like the last like 20 or so games have lowered my opinion of him as a player, like in terms of long-term upside, just
yeah. That's probably where the Jeff Green thing bloomed from, was like the last 20 games.
Right. All right, let's go on to the next one. Is Frank Ntilikina more like Patrick Beverley or Drew Holiday? I'm going to say pretty clearly Patrick Beverley at this point. And to me, like, that's almost like, in a way, like, this is, I think this is the rare one you had here where, like, almost, like, the worst player, like, I would almost think of as his ceiling, where like in a way, like, I mean, he has like higher potential than Beverly ever did just because he's so much bigger.
Of course.
If he could become the type of shooter Beverly is, while, I mean, remaining on the same defensive track that he's currently on, like if you give me that right now, like I'll take it with Frank Ntilikina.
Yeah. I think we're all hoping for Jrue Holiday, of course, but this raised, I think, like I said, I agree. I think it's Pat Beverly at the moment. This is another question I had based on this Frank thing, was if they get two max players, say it's Kyrie and KD, do you think that negatively affects his ceiling, or do you think it positively affects it? Because I was under the impression that it would negatively impact his ceiling because he would immediately be placed into a role player and not really given room to grow. Whereas I think if it was Mitch Robinson with those two, his ceiling would grow.
I think personally, first off, I'll just throw my hat into the Pat Beverly camp too.
Of course.
Put simply, just because I think that if you look at Jrue Holiday's shooting numbers for his career, even as a rookie, like you can look at his pure per game average of 8 points a game and be like, oh, he didn't score as much. But like, he's never shot worse than 34% from three in his career, out before this year, where he's shooting 32%, but with, you know, a little more of a workload. But and he's never shot worse than 43% overall. And Frank, like, unfortunately can't even sniff those numbers right now. So that's what I'm kind of worried about as far as that comparison. I think the defense, you can compare him to either of them. It's just where the offense comes to. As far as whether it would help him or hinder him to have other superstars,
in terms of his potential,
yeah, I'm kind of the belief that it might actually help him. Because even if he plays like the two guard to Kyrie or something like that, like let's say you throw him out there as the two guard and Kyrie's your point guard, Durant's your small forward, power forward, whatever, and then whoever else, Mitch at the center, hopefully Zion or something, that would be freaking sweet, but whatever the case. I think that having players out there that can hit shots and that know where they need to be on the floor will help Frank a lot, because a lot of what Frank looks to do is set things up, and he likes structure and he likes things to flow. And I think it would help him from, first off, like if he's bringing the ball down the floor, it would help him to have players that really knew where they needed to be and had the confidence to hit shots when he finds them for the shots. Because a lot of times I think Frank misses out on assists and stuff because guys aren't taking the shots that they're being set up for. But then beyond that, I just think it would take a lot of pressure off of him and maybe allow him to sort of develop into – I don't think Frank's ever going to turn into like a megastar, I guess is my biggest thing.
Yeah.
So I think his ceiling is to be a really high-functioning role player, and that would be his best path to get to a high-functioning role player, like a – you know, if we're setting lofty ceilings for Frank, I would say like Iguodala or something like that could be his like lofty ceiling.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you, Alex. I feel like we've already seen from his minutes with Kristaps last year. Insert snake noises for you guys. I think that was kind of when he was at his best, and like he does have the type of game where he's just sort of filling in on the margins. Like you have Kyrie in your backcourt. You need him to guard the best guy every night, so Kyrie doesn't have to worry about that. Like, he's going to be there. You have Kyrie and Kevin Durant breaking down a defense, and you need a guy to attack, kind of be a secondary attacker and toss some lobs to Zion. Like, he's going to be able to do that. So I think he sort of fills in all the holes perfectly. And I think it's a great question you asked, Sam, because sometimes, like, I would argue even for role player types, it would be better earlier in their career that they could kind of stretch their wings and find out exactly what they're not good at and good at, so they don't have any regrets about having to be in a role player role, and they're not frustrated by being in a role player role. And we almost saw that in a negative way last year on the Celtics, where Tatum and Jaylen Brown got to be the guys on an Eastern Conference Finals team. And now you're seeing sort of the negative ramifications of that this season, where they are not necessarily happy with the role in the Celtics, and it's causing a whole lot of issues. But conversely, I think come playoff time, they're all going to be the better for it. And it's a reason that I'm sort of still bullish on the Celtics despite their seeming struggles. And I think the same will be true for Frank. And I think it'll be double so, because the guy has no ego, and that's kind of what we all love about him. So I sort of think he's perfect for that spot.
Yeah, I think he, like, as you guys said, he's a perfect complement for those players. I was being selfish for Frank because I know he wouldn't do it. So I was just curious to see if he could be bigger without them. And obviously I'd rather have them and him be a role player, of course. But like, I was just thinking for him because I know he wouldn't do that.
I think he just came up with like a premise for like a good like SNL sketch where like Frank just like walks around and you walk around in like a red shirt that says Frank's ego on it. And like you go to a club and they're like, I'm sorry, Mr. Neil Keane, it's going to be 20 minutes again. And he's like, all right, no problem. And then you come up and you just start screaming. You're like, it's like the Key and Peele Luther I guess.
Someone's got to do it for the kid.
Right. No, I don't know. I think you should legitimately send in a resume. Like he could definitely use that person. All right, let's move on. I think we're all going to, I can't imagine that one of us will say the latter player here, but we'll go over it anyways. Is Mitchell Robinson more Clint Capela or Nerlens Noel? Guys?
Capela.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm on Capela too. Screw it. I'm going higher. I'm going to say he's more like Anthony Davis.
Oh, man.
He's Anthony Davis with better shot blocking ability.
And two eyebrows. No, I'm going with, I think Capela is just perfect for him. And it was something it's funny because I mean, I've referenced this before, but I remember last year, like, I mean, obviously that's kind of the ideal archetype for like if you're not going to have an Anthony Davis type of big, the guy you want is a Clint Capela to play off of a star shooting guard. You want a rim roller and a rim protector on your end with some ability beyond that when needed, but that's like you want him to just be perfect in those two areas, and the other stuff on the margins is kind of less important. And to me, that Mitch Robinson, his body and his game so far is the best possible version of that. And for like the longest time, like that would have been Capela or I guess if you want to prioritize defense more, Rudy Gobert. And I think Mitch is going to fit in perfectly with those two. Like you want to say the cross between those two guys. I genuinely believe that's Mitch.
On the real, yeah. I'm still sticking by my Amari Stoudemire with better defense comparison. I think he could actually become that as far as a threat, like being a threat in the pick and roll. And if he ever develops just like an elbow jumper, like we could legitimately be looking at an Amari type player.
His stroke was looking pretty good in that video that got sent out the other day.
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, whatever, empty gym shot.
No, of course.
His release is compact though. Like it's kind of interesting.
It looks natural at least.
Yeah. But it's like very, and I mean, it's not even unique to like anything. Like I've seen other shooters do this, but it was just kind of weird to see, like, it's very like compact to his body, the way that his release is. Like, it's like a quick push out. You know what I mean? Rather than like a lengthy over the head stroke, but it looked like it was working, and he's tall enough that like, you don't have to have a super high arcing release when you're that tall. So
just practice corner threes, man. That's the biggest advice. Just practice corner threes.
Yeah. That would be sick. Oh, God, can you imagine freaking Mitch Robinson making corner threes?
Oh, man.
Oy.
I'll throw out the qual, and I always throw this out. I know you basically said it too, Alex, but I'll never forget. Like I was when I was in college, I got to cover like Suns shoot arounds, and after like one day after practice they were having a shooting contest, and I just watched Tyson Chandler drain like 13 threes in a row, and it just made me come to the realization. I'm like I mean, first of all, just like, oh my God, these guys are just so much better than like even what you see in a game. Because when you think about it, like when they're playing in front of a crowd against NBA level defenses, like those are like the least possible optimal conditions for success possible, unless you're playing an MSG against the Knicks, then you're just sort of set. But it does, like, I just, like, even, like, when a guy's form looks nice and I'm like, oh, okay, he looks, like, way improved. Like, I could just never take those open gym videos too seriously.
Because
I think it's every guy in the NBA with the possible exception of maybe, like, Bismack Biyombo, like, can make some threes when there's just no one in front of them. But I do have high hopes. He's super young. So let's we'll keep our fingers crossed.
Yeah,
man, I'm excited for Mitch. And for the record, I only threw out Nerlens because, like, I literally couldn't think of anyone else as, like, a floor candidate in terms of his potential. I couldn't think of anyone.
No, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think if Knicks fans are a little bit more, like, reasonable, like, if, like, we had more, like, successes, like, we might be a little bit more wary and be like, okay, wait. Like, I mean, there are, like, rookies who, like, put up big shot blocking stats before, but it just feels different. And because I really need something to go right with the Knicks, I'm going to roll with it. All right, so let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll go through a couple more comparisons and then finishing up talking Kristaps Porzingis' future. That next on Locked On Knicks. All right, Gavin Shaw, Alex Wolf, our first ever Fan Friday guest, making some history, Sam Montella. We are sticking with the player comparison game. And going a little bit more low stakes, but then we kind of build back up to a loaded final question about KP that I loved. You just slipped it in the end here, Sam. I almost didn't notice it. It was quite savage, and I'm excited to get into it. All right, is Noah Vonleh more like rookie Noah Vonleh or pre-Thunder Patrick Patterson? I can't have any strong opinions on this one, but I love the premise.
Yeah, I mean, this is me racking my brain at like midnight. I'm gonna give him Raptors Patrick Patterson.
Sure.
I mean, that like I was like once again, I'm just trying to think of the best comparisons and just that like stretch four. If he can learn to hit his threes a little bit better, I mean, he's a good passer and at least a savvy defender. He could be a really really good role player, and I think it would be good for us to sign him longer term.
Yeah, I could see Patrick Patterson. You know, I don't know why, but I thought that Pat's numbers were a little more gaudy than they are, like in previous years, and they're really not. So I think that's pretty reasonable. You know, like maybe like Patrick Patterson with a little bit better passing as well, because Vonleh's definitely flashed those passing chops at different points this year. But yeah, I mean, from the 3-point percentage perspective, I mean, Patterson's a career 37% three-point shooter. He topped out at what, like 44% in like half a season after he got traded to Sacramento that one year. So,
oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that's a pretty reasonable comparison for him. I don't think rookie Noah Vonleh. He was pretty bad his rookie year. Like he definitely.
Yeah, I know. I was like, is this a blip? Is this a blip this year? And I don't think so.
I don't think it's a blip. I think he's legitimately developed. I was thinking for a while this year that he had developed into like a starter, and I don't know if I necessarily believe that anymore. But I think that he's definitely developed himself into a quality bench big that can defend, shoot a little bit, handle the ball a little bit, which is kind of underrated and cool. And he could definitely rebound the ball. So yeah. I like him. I definitely want to bring him back too, as long as the price is right. He might be playing himself into another barely more than minimum contract at this point, you know, if the market kind of dries up. So we'll see if this like swoon continues after the All-Star break, but yeah, we'll see. I think though, for the long term in his career, he'll be like a solid role player.
Yeah,
I just can't help but feel like I mean you guys kind of hinted at it, but his shooting is like just totally his swing skill. Like if he can get up to 37-38%, like I genuinely believe he could have a 12-13 year NBA career, which is something I never thought I'd say about Noah Vonleh. Like I thought he'd be out of the league already at this point. And if that shooting doesn't get back up, and I mean, people even earlier in the season were sort of calling it out, like, all right, he's shooting 40%, but it's like when Rondo is shooting like 38%, it's like, you know, when you have 10 seconds to load up, stare at the rim, pull out a protractor to like measure like the ideal for it. I mean, guys, you're going to hit your share of shots. And like the second he started getting defended even like moderately more seriously, like that just totally went away. So if he can get up to the point where his early season shooting is who he actually is, which I think is a little optimistic because he was like well over 40% for a stretch. But if he can even hover around 37%, like I think he could be a longtime NBA player with sort of his other abilities. But I want to move on to Kadeem Allen. You threw out two different comps for Kadeem Allen. And I think me and Alex are well on the record at this point as being on Kadeem Allen Island, or I don't know. It's growing. It might be a full city at this point. But you threw out Trey Burke and Tim Frazier. I'm going to go a step further. I think he is better, and this is the first time I think, Alex, I guess you said it with Mitch versus Capella. I think he's better than both of these guys, to me. And that might be sort of more what I look for in a backup point guard in terms of ability to play with pace, search out teammates, and just be as efficient as humanly possible. While you can make the argument certainly that Trey Burke is obviously capable of leading an offense like for one night out of five on a better basis, but I guess Kadeem Allen is just more my cup of tea. So I'm team Kadeem Allen over both of these guys.
I threw out Tim Frazier because I went to Penn State and I watched him play.
He's a beast, and I remember.
Yeah, he was really good, and like I'm really happy for him. I'm kind of shocked he's still in the league. But I feel like every time he gets minutes and I look in the box score, the dude has, like, 7 assists. So, I don't like that Kadeem Allen, I'd be honest, I haven't gotten excited about him because half of my mind is on next year. So it's like, cool. I'm really happy for him that he's doing what he's doing. But like, I haven't gotten excited about it. And I'll definitely give him over Trey Burke though.
Yeah. I'd say 1,000% he's better than Trey Burke. I'm not even going to justify that with a proper response. That is an insult, sir. But Tim Frazier, I mean, yeah, maybe that's what he comes like when he comes down from this kind of like high that he's on right now, maybe that's where he ends up. I mean, you also have to consider like Kadeem Allen is playing decent minutes on this team because of injuries and because the team is so talent, you know, decrepit you know, on an actual good team, he's like at best your third or fourth guard probably.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is what Tim Frazier is and his stats reflect it. So I could definitely see him being like a Tim Frazier type player. I hope he becomes even more than that. I mean, of course, but
it probably won't be with the Knicks though.
No, I could see. I actually think so. I just like tweeted, or did I tweet? Or this might have been the PNT comment section. I forget. Someone asked me like, "Well, why aren't they signing Kadeem Allen to a regular contract
or whatever it is?
Because he's already on a two-way.
Yeah.
So why are they not signing him and converting him like they do with Trier? And I think the answer is that they're gonna keep him on the two-way deal because then they get his restricted free agency rights after the season for like almost nothing. Like his cap hold is gonna be like $1 million or less. And then they get matching rights if he signs a deal somewhere else and also can go over the cap to sign him and stuff like that. So I think
Ron Baker deal.
Yeah, I mean
2 years, $8 million.
Yeah, just don't give him just don't use up an exception on him because that would be stupid. But they're doing it the right way, I think, with him. Like, I do think their plan is to keep him and, you know, maybe even keep some of these other guys like John Jenkins and stuff like that based off how they're operating right now. But yeah,
the theory is they did the John Jenkins contract so they could use him in the Davis trade like the Rockets did for Paul.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely true. Yeah, I saw someone tweet that the other day. I think it was...
It might have been Tommy Beer. I forget, though.
Might have been Tommy Beer, or maybe it was Brian Gibberman. I forget. Someone sent that tweet the other day. I forget. But yeah, it's interesting. I'm intrigued to see how that all goes down. But
then the catch comes in where Kevin Durant says, "I'll come, but you have to keep John Jenkins." And then it's decision time. But it was due at that point. All right, I think this next one, this next one was almost like I think the most intriguing of the entire lot for me. Is Alondra Trier more sweet? I got two girls like Lou Will or Dion Waiters, and I genuinely like I wanted to put some thought into this, and I think I'm not sure who it is, but I think there's a better comparison out there for him somewhere in the middle of these two guys because the shooting that he's shown so far, and I want to see more of it down the stretch. Because out of college, like no one had any idea he was going to be this level of three-point shooter in the NBA. Makes me think he's better than Dion Waiters. But Lou Williams has turned himself into such a good player. Even if Trier like is sort of on that trajectory with the rookie season he's having, it feels just a little bit optimistic because Lou, I remember, was just so much younger when he came into the NBA too. So I want to – and also like I just don't think their games are – even if they kind of score in the same spots, I don't think they're extremely similar with Trier being – quite a bit more physical, but I don't know. Can you guys kind of think of like a middle ground between those two guys? Because that's sort of what I'm looking for.
I actually kind of like the Lou Williams comparison, if we're being honest. Like, it's a little lofty, but like if you look at Lou Williams's like age 22, 23 seasons, which he already had, you know, 3-4 years of experience in the NBA at that point. Pretty statistically similar as far as like the percentages they shot and stuff. And, you know, Trier's averaging a little less than whatever, but he's playing less minutes than Williams was at that point. I guess maybe you could say like a smaller, not even that much smaller, like maybe like a Will Barton type. Maybe he's kind of like Will Barton.
Yeah. I like that.
You know, like a good,
yeah, I like
good,
Will Barton.
Yeah, like mostly there to shoot, but can pass it a little bit, you know, if you need him to. Not really like a point guard, but like just kind of a combo guard, but like taller so he can kind of like float between the two and the three. I guess that's sort of my comparison for him. But I don't hate the Lou Will comparison either. I mean, it's, you know, it's easy to look at it now, like, where Lou Williams has been in the league, what, like,
quite a long time.
Yeah, like, seven,
at least a decade.
You got to add up all the teams on Basketball Reference, because he's been around for a while, though. I mean, so 05, 06 was rookie year. It's now 18, 19. So that's what, 13 years?
Yeah.
So that's,
and he's still at his peak almost.
Yeah, he's reached his peak over the last couple of years, which is wild to think about. But like, he really like escalated over the years. He used to be more like Trier than he is now. And he kind of grew into the player that he is now. So I think there's a shot. I mean, I don't think it's entirely likely, but I think there's a shot.
Yeah, I think we'll take it if he's Sweet Lou.
No, that would be great. My whole thing with that is like, and I think, Sam, I'm kind of interested to hear your opinion on this. With Trier, I'm always questioning, like, do I believe my eyes? And like when he came back from injury and he was just like terrible, like he was shooting like 10% from three, and like he had no explosiveness, and the jumper just looked like it had like no consistency whatsoever. I was like, okay, like this is like more what I expected, and then the truth is probably somewhere in the middle between like how he started the season and how he came back after injury, and that was going to be like his long-term trajectory. But then over the last like month and a half, he's been about as good as he was earlier in the season, even if he's not putting up quite the same scoring numbers, and his passing has really taken a leap that I haven't quite predicted that it would get to. Do you think what we're seeing from him over the last like month or so is the actual Alonzo Trier, or do you think this is still kind of just like a 30-40 game mirage?
It's so hard to tell because of how talentless, like we said before, the Knicks are. It's like, if you put him on a good team, what would we see? And I'm genuinely like, I love what I'm seeing, but I'm a little scared for him because I can't get this idea out of my head that he's like, obviously without the shitty attitude, but like Nick Young. And like that idea just keeps coming into my head, and it might not be based in any reality or fact, but it's there and it's scary. So I don't know. For me, the jury's out on Alonzo Trier. I really don't know what to say. I really don't know what to think about him.
I mean, I think that's kind of a good floor ceiling comparison. Like, floor would be like Nick Young or bad J.R. Smith. Minus like the weird attitude problems.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, because he definitely seems to have his head screwed on straight. Other than that much. Other than that one DM incident where he like yelled at the fan. But other than that, like, I think he learned his lesson pretty quick from that one. But yeah, I don't know. The more I'm looking at Barton now, the more I'm like, damn, maybe he is kind of like Will Barton. I feel good about this.
Yeah, that's not bad.
I think that's kind of our like middle ground between like Nick Young and like Lou Williams.
Will Barton too.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, Will Barton would be a great spot for him to end up as an undrafted guy who came into the league at 23 years old. I mean, that would be pretty fantastic.
Yeah, I guess my big thing with him is, like, I'm interested, like hypothetically, like, I mean, fingers crossed, like, the Knicks build this super team next year. Like, how tenable is his defense? And, like, is he, like, a guy who, like, in a hypothetical, like, I'm not even talking about, like, a final series, like in, like, first, second round, like, is he someone who's going to get exposed on that end, or can he survive, and will his offense be good enough that it's worth playing him against other teams' benches? That's sort of the question I have with him. I mean, it's getting way, way ahead of ourselves. Like, even here's the thing, with an undrafted guy, if you get to the point of asking that question, he's already a massive, massive success.
True.
All right. Next one is our guy, D-Dot, as you put it, Damian Dotson, more Danny Green or Tony Snell? And this is an interesting one to me, because when he's going and we said it a bunch of times on the pod, like, he, like, aesthetically, he's very Danny Green. His jump shot looks beautiful. He's very fluid defensively. He makes, like, offensively, like, he's not going to destroy you off the dribble, but he's very opportunistic, and he's not like a stick out there. Like, he can get stuff going when there's an opening off of a sort of secondary creation opportunity. But I don't really have a strong feel for this one. The stats certainly say he's more Tony Snell, but I'm interested to hear what you guys think about it.
Yeah,
I'll let you go ahead, Sam. Yeah, go for it.
All right. So I never, like, when I thought Danny Green, I do not think Damian Dotson will be able to shoot like Danny Green shot when he was with the Spurs, even now, and he was winning championships. But, like, it was more that prototypical, actually really useful 3-and-D wing that you can use in conference finals and finals games. Like, you think he'll be that kind of role player? And then Tony Snell is, like, for me, was kind of the opposite, because when Tony Snell, like, first was coming up with the Bulls, like, I know a lot of people, and even a little bit myself, thought, like, yeah, this is going to be the guy who fills out that Bulls five and, like, takes them to the next level. Like, that gives him that versatile wing defender and three-ball shooter that can really bring him up. And he just was never – he just never got there. And then even with the Bucks out of him, I thought the same thing. I was like, yeah, Tony Snell's a nice young player. Like, now – what is he, like, 29 now? And he's just, like, kind of super average and, like, not that good. And, like, with Dotson, I can see that already forming me. Like, I think Dotson can be, like, a really, really solid NBA player, solid role player. And that's what I'm hoping. I actually think that's what he will be. But there's the lingering Tony Snell thing definitely in the back of my head.
Yeah, I'm more inclined to believe that, like, I think he's a better defender than Tony Snell. Like, at least to my eye. And, you know, I'm no Tony Snell expert, but
what neither I've seen am I, really.
Yeah, but from what I've seen of Tony Snell, I think he's a little bit better of a defender. You just got to, like, the big thing with Dot is he just really needs to find consistency. And that's the biggest thing I think that's going to, you know, either sink or swim with him, is if he can consistently find a 40% three-point shot or greater, hopefully. Like, you would hope it would be greater than 40%. That would make him, like, a solid starter for years to come to me. And if he can't find that, then he's going to be, like, I think he'll be on an NBA roster forever, but he would go from, like, solid starter to, like, fourth, fifth, like, utility guard forward that you mostly only use when, you know, people are injured or whatever. I'm more inclined to believe that he could become a starter, though, or at least like a solid bench piece. You know what I mean? I'm trying to think of like someone over the years that's been like maybe not necessarily a starting shooting guard, but like someone who can come off the bench for defense and a little shooting.
The first one that came to my mind, and I don't even know if this is a good one because I don't remember his game that well, was James Posey.
Okay, yeah, actually, I could kind of see that, because Posey was a player on a championship team who played a crucial role off the bench. He was on that Celtics team.
Yeah.
And provided some shooting for them and a lot of defense at different points. I was thinking, apparently, my impression of this guy for his whole career is way lower than it should be, but I was thinking, like, Roger Bell. But Roger Bell was actually way better than
way
I thought.
Way faster.
Yeah, and I looked up his stats. Roger Bell shot like 44% from three on almost six attempts one year.
Seven Second Suns.
Yeah, it was that exact team. And then he shot 41% the next year. So I don't – that's not going to be Roger Bell. That was a bad choice. That was – I'm like remembering late career Roger Bell, apparently. yeah, I don't know. I kind of like the Posey one, though. I like Posey.
Yeah, that's a good one. I was about to throw out, like, super duper, like, poor man's Rip Hamilton. But again, just, like, grossly, like, but because that's the thing. Because, like, aesthetically, like, he does kind of look like those guys, like, especially when he's rolling. Because he's just, like, he's so fluid. Like, I would say, like, he's in a lot of ways, he's, like, the most fluid guy on the team. Like, he just, like, looks good playing basketball.
Yeah.
Productive-wise, he's sort of Tony Snell so far. So I guess we got to see how that dichotomy sort of sorts itself out. All right, so to finish up this initial edition of Fan Friday, Sam, you just hit us over the head with like a warhammer to end this. You want us to predict Kristaps Porzingis's next 5 years? That's so loaded, Alex. I want you to bring everyone down a little bit, so then when I'm really optimistic about it, people can just hate on me, and we can wrap it up there.
You're gonna be optimistic about it.
Yeah, I'm gonna be fairly optimistic about it.
I'm gonna say he first year he comes back and he's just not the same, and he can't hit anything and he has no explosion. And then he and Doncic get in a huge fight at the end of year one. Doncic banishes him from the team. This is if he even resigns there, which isn't even a guarantee. But he resigns there. He and Doncic get in a huge fight. He gets banished. For the whole second year, he spends it Joakim Noah-ing, just like off exploring jungles. He goes and visits Phil Jackson and reconciles with him. They smoke some peyote in the Arizona desert and then ride ATVs up to Montana.
Jesus.
Then he comes back the next year after that and has kind of a revival year, but... doesn't quite like put it together, but he plays pretty well. And that's his third year. Okay, fourth year, I don't know. I just want to get to the last year, because the last year he slithers into someone's garden and finds a home for himself as a garden snake. And that's his fifth year.
Okay.
I don't know.
The real
that was
answer
creative,
this,
at least.
Yeah, the real answer to this, outside of all the jokes, is I don't care to look into the future with him, because I want to strike a fine line where I don't actually want to wish bad on him. Like, I certainly, the first part is just a joke. I don't actually want him to be, like, injured for his whole life, because that's cruel and nobody deserves that. And it's ruined so many potentially great careers. However, I also don't want him to find success, because if he does, then that means that maybe the Knicks lost the trade. Although, if quite frankly, if Durant and Kyrie Irving come and fill that cap space, then the Knicks win the trade regardless.
See ya.
Yeah, exactly. I don't care. I don't care what Porzingis turns into at that point. But it's tricky. It's a tricky thing to get into. I don't want well for him, but I don't want him to be like crippled. I guess it's my thing there.
You just want him to be mediocre.
Yeah, I do realistically think, and I've said this to Gavin before, based off of Mark Cuban's track record with like getting free agents and team building and stuff of that nature. I know technically he's not the like GM, but he definitely makes personnel decisions. I do think if I was a Mavs fan, I mean, I'd be super excited about Doncic and Porzingis, but I don't think that those two alone, even at full strength, are enough to get you much higher than the sixth seed in the West, because the West is just so loaded.
I'm in total disagreement with you. Finish up.
Durant will be on the Knicks, so the West will open up a bit.
Yeah, but even if he leaves and they just go back to the same team that won 73 games, I mean, that's not really, like, going to kill anybody.
Shit.
Yeah. So that's kind of my thought on the whole Porzingis thing. Like, even if things work out and he gets healthy and he stays with the Mavs, I'm not 100% confident that Cuban is going to be able to build, like, a perennial contender around them. I think they could be a perennial playoff team, and maybe it would actually kind of be reminiscent of Dirk's first, like, however many years in the league, like 9 years in the league or whatever, when the Mavericks were always really good during the regular season, but like could never really get over the hump. So that's how I feel about it objectively, semi-objectively. I can't be saying
mine is slightly different. It doesn't end with him living in a garden, though. That was, I did think about that. I didn't want to totally rule that out right off the bat, but I don't know. I'm a lot more optimistic about it than you are. And like, in my mind, like, at least, like, it's kind of like, it's more like two sliding doors almost. Like, either like he's going to be perennially hurt, and like, I have like as much as like I've like derided the trade and I've been upset about it, I've acknowledged the injuries is like a very real thing. The fact that like he seems to wear down after 30 games is like a very real thing. Like, I don't disregard that. Like, I think there's like a distinct possibility that like he's Yao Ming, and like injuries like just keep him from reaching his upside, because guys that are bigger than 7'2" and have some level of fluidity, history has shown us time and time again that doesn't last. And like, if it does last, like, I mean, you look at like a Will Chamberlain, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, those guys end up being generational. And when it doesn't, it's awful and it sucks. But I think if it, I'm going to look towards the positive and say like, next season, like, I don't think he'll be like close to 100%. And I think he'll have like a lot of the same issues he had his first 3 years in the league, where he wore down early. Like, he has some injuries, like probably only ends up, like, especially with like maintenance and stuff, only ends up playing like 50 games or so next season. But I think going forward after that, like, if he can stay healthy and sort of like rediscover the form he had early in his third season, like, I'm of the belief, and I've said this on this podcast before, like, I think Luka Doncic is going to end up being one of the two or three best players in the NBA, and will like evolve into like a James Harden level offensive force. Like, I genuinely believe he's on that trajectory. And like, to me at least, like, with how precocious of a passer Doncic is, like, I can't really imagine like a better scenario for KP. And I'm not sure how strong that team is going to be in terms of filling out the rest of the roster. Like, that's obviously a very real question, but I think those two by themselves, like, I think it's going to put them amongst the two or three best teams in the West year after year after year. So I'm obviously a little bit more bullish, but it comes down to his health, which, who knows.
Yeah, I mean, 5 years to me, Giannis and Luka will be the two best players in the league, definitely. But For me, for KP at least, I think to do a little joke one, I think his brother convinces him to take the qualifying offer. He gets hurt again, and then he signs with the Nets and becomes for a max and becomes fulfills his draft day prophecy of becoming Andrea Bargnani.
That's dark, man.
But realistically, I mean, the injury thing was something, and like the stamina thing was something I was always worried about, but I was willing to bury it down deep inside because we had a great player. And now, like, I can kind of come out with it, and you just mentioned it. Like, I am worried about his injuries, but like you said, if he's healthy and he gets and I think they did a pretty good job of clearing their cap with the Harrison Barnes thing, but I'm not sure if they can get some pieces around and get him healthy. If Rick Carlisle sticks around, they could do some serious damage in the next 2 years in the West, 2 or 3 years.
I mean, it's intriguing because the early rumors as to why they cleared up that space is that they want to make a run at Vucevic. And I already question their decision making if they think that Vucevic is going to be an ideal partner next to Porzingis, because I really don't know if that's like the answer.
I could just see Rick Carlisle just doing some crazy things with that, just making them so good.
He'll make Rick Carlisle is such a good coach.
He's ridiculous.
They'd be at least passable, but I don't know if the brief history that we have tells us that that's the best situation for him or not, because you don't want to pull him away from the rim too much on defense, Porzingis.
I agree.
Vucevic can't defend the perimeter. I don't know. I don't want to speculate too much about that because it's annoying to me to think about that team with him.
It'd be weird.
But whatever. But
seems obvious that they're going for the European thing that they do that. It's almost painfully obvious.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely true. And they still have like Berea and
yeah.
I think they have at least one other like Euro. Well, they might talk Dirk into staying one more year. I get the feeling he'll just become an instant assistant coach though next year.
And they have
player coach
Kostas Antetokounmpo too. So they have the Giannis date already all set. If Giannis joins that team, it's over when he's a free agent. That would do it. Anyways, Sam, thank you so much for coming on. Do you have anything to plug? Anything we could share out? You want some Twitter followers? We live to serve here on Locked On Knicks.
No, I got nothing to plug. I'm content with my 150 Twitter followers, I think. So not worried about it. I just appreciate coming on. I had a blast.
What's your instant feedback? Did you have a good time?
Yeah, I was excited when I heard you guys were going to do this. I actually never thought I'd be on it. Just so happens I'm the first. So I hope I set a good benchmark.
You definitely did, dude. You sound like a natural, to be totally honest.
I'm a salesman, so.
Perfect. I did that for years too. I think everybody works sales at some point in their life, for the most part.
It changes you though.
Yeah, it definitely does.
All right, on that note, we'll wrap up this edition of Locked On Knicks. Again, Sam, can't thank you enough for coming on. You set an extremely high bar for anyone coming on in the future. And we will be back over the weekend reviewing the Knicks post-game first game post All-Star break against the Minnesota Timberwolves. Until then, be well. Enjoy your weekend.